It's such a privilege to introduce our speaker tonight. You know, you hear in the rooms, you have to give it away to keep it. And this man has given and given and given of himself to individuals, to groups, to service work, to clubhouses, including this one, from which I understand he was once banned for life. So, you know. So, sorry, Nava. She's back. So, to give that much, you know, is really the way you get 36 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, with that, I give you Rusty Jones.
I'm Rusty Jones, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 18, 1982. So yesterday was 36 years. Some of us go way back. We've lost a lot of people, and I'd like to take a moment for those people if we can. Thank you. Yes, I didn't get sober here in Napa. I got sober at a place called the Biscayne Room. Back in the day when we took drunks with no money, no insurance, no nothing, and off the streets and dried them out, old-fashioned AA way. And that's basically how I got sober. I'm not up here to tell you what happened, what it was like, and what happened now. I'm here to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And there is that difference. It is critical to some of us. I came here. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was barred from the Buckhead Mental Health Center for conduct unbecoming of the mentally ill. That's what I came here for you people to work with. We've made a lot of progress. We've got a ways to go, and we're doing it all one day at a time. I'm not up here as a schizophrenic, though. I'm up here as an alcoholic. I was certified paranoid schizophrenic prognosis poor. And it's an interesting diagnosis, but that's all it is a diagnosis. I'm not real concerned what the doctors choose to call my condition today. You know it wrong. I want to get on about the business of why I'm up here as an alcoholic to talk about drinking and not drinking. I drank for 14 years without a lot of real no consequence in my first 14 years out there. I remember going to a fraternity party as a freshman. I remember buying a bottle of scotch. It was an Usher's Green Stripe scotch. Not the highest quality. No Johnny Walker, just Usher's, you know. Anyway, I bought a bottle. And I remember buying a bottle of scotch and going to the fraternity party. Next thing I know, I'm sitting in the gravel, leaning up against my roommate's car with about that much left in the bottle. Total blackout. First blackout. Today I know that only alcoholics black out. Most people will pass out before they black out. I'm a blackout drinker, and that's how I drank for 14 years. My last 3 years were separated from the first 14 by a spiritual breakthrough. And notice I didn't say nervous breakdown. That's more of a medical term that I don't particularly care for. There are no nervous breakdowns, only spiritual breakthroughs. Now, in the middle of one of these girls, or whatever you want to call them, you kind of feel like a breakdown because nothing's working. But, you know, in time, for me, everything works out the way it's supposed to. And that's why I'm up here, to let you know that everything works out the way it's supposed to. Where was I?
3 years.
3 years, yeah. Thank you. About 3 years, I had the break, and some of you know about the break, others don't. I don't really go into a lot of detail on that in the meeting. This isn't a place for that. There's the better part of my story just isn't meeting material people. Not Nick's company or something, you know, along those lines, and just read between the lines, fill in the blanks however you're comfortable with, and we'll deal with that later. Anyway, I had those 3 years from 79 to February, 79 to February 82 were just not good years for me. That was my bottom. I was a blackout drinker, and I drank to black out, and I blacked out, and I drove in blackouts, and I don't know, only by the grace of God did I not kill myself or someone else. Only by the grace of God. And that's what I'm up here to do. I'm not up here to tell a drunk log. I'm up here to tell you how I found God. And I found God through trusting the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes telling you how that worked. But that's pretty much the essence of my story right there. The room was good for me. It was good to me. Senior director was a lady named Maggie, some of you have heard of. A wonderful lady who had Maggie barred me as a newcomer, I'd be dead now. But she didn't. My first sober blackout. And see, most of us stop blacking out when we stop drinking. The rest of us have got something else to deal with. And it can require professional help. It can require, if you are blacking out sober, let's talk to that, about that after the meeting. I have many sober blackout, but that's getting out of alcoholism, so we'll put move on from that, and we'll just keep it on to getting back to the room. I just somehow stayed sober. The first thing I was taught was don't put anything else in. Don't put anything else in. Self-medication is a major problem for all of us. If I'm not self-medicating, I've got a shot at the rest of it coming together into some order, some... And you know, that I can't tell you how that works. I just know that it does work from my experience. The room became my higher power. And that was all I knew about God. I was fresh out of the Marine Corps when I first came to the room. I was officially discharged as a captain February the 21st, 1981. I got sober February 18th. 1982. So I was understood blind obedience still. They teach you that, and they teach it and they do it well. You just do what you're told. no questions asked. And one of the first things that I thought when I was taught was take the cotton out of my ears and stick it in my mouth. I did not know what I was talking about. I was violating traditions. I didn't know. I had a lot to learn. But then, see, I'm one of those types that I believe all the noise that was coming out of my mouth. I believed everything I told you people. Four things. Didn't have a chance. Anyway, I remember getting in my car sober. My sponsor was a guy who drank again after 4 years, but we've said a prayer for him. He's no longer with us. But he taught me to have, he was an old Navy man who taught me something called watertight integrity. Some of you Navy people know what I mean by watertight integrity. I don't want to get into the details, but you lock it down. You lock everything down, and then if you're on the right side of the door, you're all right. If you're on the wrong side of the door, you're in trouble. It's a life and death matter. And wouldn't be called watertight integrity. Anyway, I may be a little off on the concepts there, but you Navy people can get with me after the meeting on that. I'm a little off, but that's my understanding and the way it's explained to me by the old, by my first sponsor. Anyway, so we had a backup plan, and that's another good thing to have a backup plan. You know, if nothing's working, what are you going to do? Not going to drink no liquor. We know what don't work. If I know what don't work and I'm willing to try something different, I can make it. I can sneak in the back door here, see. Just by knowing what don't work and being willing to try something different. So I knew I was getting into trouble, so I had to find my backup plan. I got in the car and I headed out from Buckhead, where I was staying with my mother. Lived with Mommy, was fine at 36. Love that. That was great. That's not true, but that's something. Some of you don't know more about that than others. Anyway, I've got my own place today, thank God. Anyway, so I take off. I'm headed for Brady Hospital. Have you 8th floor for you? I don't know what floor they're on. It's still 8th floor? Still 8th floor. Yeah, everybody get that? Everybody got that? 8th floor Brady? Backup plan? Okay, so we head for 8th floor Brady. We end up somewhere called Vernon. Not between Buckhead and Grady Hospital. I missed a number of turns somewhere down the road. Driving in the blackout, sober. Pull up in the yard, first car that comes by, this guy drives up. I don't know what stopped the car. I can only tell you God somehow stopped that car, because nothing else was wrong with that car. It just died on me. I thought I was out of gas. Back in that day, you pull the hood up when you get in trouble with a car on the road. You just pull the hood up, and that tells everybody you're in trouble. Well, the first guy that stopped pulls up, and he asked me if I was all right. I said, yes, I'm trying to get to the hospital. I'm headed for trying to get to Grady Hospital. He said, well, then the Noonan Hospital right ahead of us there. So I get in the car with him. He's got a bottle of vodka sitting on him. And I told him, I quit drinking about 40 days ago. This was no medication. I don't know what I was surviving on other than the grace of God. Good luck, whatever. But some of these chemistries used to come off real slow, I guess. Anyway, he took me down there. My fiance, a very wonderful young lady that I didn't deserve. That's a whole other story. We won't get into that. Some of this we just have to just pass on for later, you know. Anyway, she came down, picked me up, got me back home out of her place. somewhere. Well, anyway, my psychiatrist took me. My sponsor had me worked out for, I could see a psychiatrist down at the Fulton County Detox, what we used to call it then. Is it still there? Fulton County Detox still there? Boulevard. Yeah, here we go. See, we know about these things. Oh, we're going to Fulton County Detox. Yeah. Anyway, I got down in this psychiatrist. Seeing psychiatrist, trying to get up. They shot me full of medication. They shot me full of barazine down at the Newton Hospital. That's all they knew. They just shot me full of barazine. You know, they didn't need to check in. I said, I don't know why I didn't need to check in, but anyway, maybe they didn't either. Maybe they didn't want to check me in. Anyway, so I come back to him, see the psychiatrist, and he's got us talking to him, and he reaches over in his briefcase, pulls out a cartoon, and hands it to me. And it's a picture of a man with his head in a wood press like this. He says, screw it down another notch, you son of a bitch, I work better under pressure. Well, thank God for a sprinkle of sense of humor, you know, because that's what I needed at the time, and that's what God provided, and that's what worked. And then my job ended shortly after that. I think I may be missing some stuff on order here, but we'll deal with that later too. My job ended. I was a yard man. I worked my way from battalion communications officer in the Marine Corps to yard man. What IBM was looking for. I don't know what they're looking for. It wasn't that. But anyway, you're not doing any good. Talked to several people who've done this before about sending the notes, and that don't work for me. I just got to get up in and get through this. Where was I?
Yard man
job ended, so I took a job driving for a guy named Jocko. Some of y'all remember Jocko. Owned a Sandy Springs taxi. No Jocko, he's gone to the beyond, and taxi company no longer exists. But it was there for me when I needed it. It was there for me when I needed it. So I'm driving a taxi. Getting better, one day at a time. So I had all the Jocko I could stand. And his cab company, which I didn't like the way he ran it down there. I wanted to teach him something called professionalism. He didn't want to hear it. He'd been running his cab company his way, the way he. Anyway, that's a whole other story. It's my story, not Jocko's. Might be a better one, you know. I won't leave him alone. Yeah. Let him rest in peace, I guess. Anyway, so that lasted till I found a job, and I wasn't employable. So if you're unemployable, you go to the labor pool, see. Somebody know about the labor pool. You're unemployable, you go to the labor pool. Don't hire anybody. Hire me. Certified paramedic, they didn't know I was a kid's brain. They just knew I was just a little off. May still be a little off. I'm getting better one day at a time. What was it? Labor pool. Yeah, labor pool. Got the job in labor pool. Thank you, gang. See, I got some of my good people up front. Some of the old timers sitting in the back there. Thank y'all for coming. A couple of you have known me since day one. You know, whole another animal there. Worked the labor pool until I got arrested by my mother. Yeah, that was a whole other deal there. Yeah. My relationship with my mother was never that good. It was always a little toxic. And, but anyway, We're going to let her slide now, too. Out of there, and that's about 6 months. Time to her, you know. That wasn't my mother. That was my first arrest. That was a church that had me arrested. We'll let that church remain anonymous. Anyway, I had a psychiatrist tell me that if I found the right church, I'd get the help I needed. Well, I'm in the wrong church, I guess. Anyway, so Satan mobile. Anyway, so got out of there. I think I went back driving Jocko again or something. I don't remember that part of my life that well. I worked another labor pool. I'm not sure what it is. I remember sitting on a taxi stand. And up on that taxi stand, some of y'all remember Shaky Sam. He was a great man. Very humble man. And I'm on the taxi stand about 4 years sober. And Sam probably had, 20 years on that pool? Somewhere in that neighborhood. So Sam comes up and I explained to Sam what was wrong and everything, blah, 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 blah. And he said to me something I hope I never forget. He said, "Well, Rusty, I'm at peace with my priorities. Sorry, you're not. Not too worried about anybody else's." That was Sam. He wasn't competing with anybody. He was just doing his thing. At peace with his own priorities. By the grace of God, I'm pretty much at peace with my priorities today. And it makes a lot more difference than most, a lot of other things. And this much less important than that peace. I'm going to go back to that, picking up my first sponsor. I was at the water cooler at Biscayne. A gentleman named McCartan told me I needed a sponsor. He said, "Get a sponsor." It was an order, and I understood orders, and I got his sponsor. So I picked my first sponsor. First order to do is I did it. No questions asked. That's the key to this deal, early. No questions asked. Just do what you're told. You might not be telling the right thing, but you know, you learn that too. You know, it's another lesson. But you don't drink no liquor. I got a sponsor. I lasted about 4 years, and then I needed another sponsor. None of the men seemed to want what I had. I didn't deal with men that well back in the day. Still don't sometimes. Now we have our problems, guys, you know. Working one of them. I was in the old night owls meeting at the night owls. This is before the night owls got thrown out of Biscayne. For protesting me, Maggie barred me, so they just threw the whole group out. What was it?
Second sponsor.
I had a couple of one-time sponsors who told me to talk to a guy named Al Collier. Knew how I didn't take care of the man, didn't like him, didn't want him. So I just blew him off. So I went and talked to somebody else and said, "You need to talk to Al Collier." You know, I still didn't take care of my house. I talked to somebody else. They said, "You need to talk to Al Collier." We got a pattern going here, gang. Somebody knew something about Al. Somebody knew something about me. Somebody made something click. So I went and talked to Al. And then I working with a female. I let her remain anonymous. She still would have signed up. I asked her if she'd consider sponsoring me. And she said something I hope I never forget. She said, "What set do y'all?" I told her 11. She said, "Wrong, the first." And that established that relationship right there. wrong the first. I'm going to do it my way. We're going back to step one. We're going to do it our way. And we did it her way. And they started clicking, see, because I clicked with a sponsor. And then some people had a problem with using a female sponsor. I talked to Hal about it. I hadn't fired him yet. Wanted to, but he knew the book too well. I'm a big book man. So Hal says, he said, well, you know, Rusty, you think about the damn woman. You start the debt of the thief, and you don't talk to the sponsor. And that's what he told me. He said, they fucked a woman, you'd start the death of the thief, you got the right sponsor already. Now just go figure on that. One of the things Hal taught me was about the second step and the first step. I've got to have that foundation. It's got to be solid. It's got to be something that's not going to be blown away by whatever gets blown away in these rooms, and too much gets blown away in these rooms. Talking to him about the second step, he said to him, I called him one night, and my life was totally unmanageable, and I knew it, and he knew it. And I talked to him about it. He said, well, Rusty, if my life was that unmanageable, I think I'd fire the damn manager. Which was me. So I'm still working on that. See, getting me out of the way doesn't work real well some days. And we have that problem because me and God have some things we're still wrestling over. I'm okay with these wheels. It's time I got a problem with. Anyway, so we got that taken care of. The second step is all about accountability to me still. It's no theological dilemmas involved. It's just, you know, either I'm the final authority or I'm accountable. Now, which is it? Which is it? Am I the final authority or am I accountable? So we moved on into the third step, back to my female sponsor. Moving on through that, I called her one night after taking the third step, and she asked me a question I hope I never forget. She said, Rusty, what part of your track record proves you know what's best for you? And I didn't have any real good answer for that. What part of your track record proves you know what's best for you? It's an interesting question for my kind, see. When we're not doing well and things aren't functioning the way I see. Back to being at peace with my priorities, which I wasn't doing a very good job of at that time, or I wouldn't have the problems I did. So anyway, that takes us up to step three, which is in the book. And if I break a big book open, page 60, it says, being convinced we're at step three, which is a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? Doesn't say anything about thinking, it says about doing. And he goes on to talk about normal people here, page 61. The word alcohol is not on that page at all. The word alcoholic is mentioned over here on page 63, where it clearly says, our troubles we think were basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. An extreme example of self-will run riot. That's what was killing Rusty Jones. That's what was keeping me sick. It was an extreme example of self-will run riot. As I see. The doctors, they can call it what they want to. But that was what I found was wrong with me, and that's what I'm working on still today. I'm not going to read the whole page 61, but if you want to know That's pretty much tells me what I'm dealing with today. Alcoholism and self-will online. The fourth step, which I believe in this book on that step, if you haven't done a four step out of 12 and 12, you're going to have a hard time when you get to 6. You may be able to fake 5, but 6 is going to be kind of difficult. And what it says in this book is, since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, it isn't strange that we often let these far exceed their intended purpose. When they drive us primary, we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures than are possibly due us. That is the point at which we depart from that degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth. That is the measure of your character defects, or if you wish, our sin. Ooh, we're using the word sin. But he did. Anyway. Doesn't matter what I call it, see. Just a label, just a name, just a whatever. That is where, if I could only change one word in a literature, I'd change the word remove to recalibrate. Because it makes more sense to me. Because the only thing I'm giving up is excesses. My God-given human instincts are part of my humanity, and I'm going to have to live with them for another 24 on this planet, hopefully. That takes us up to 5. Yeah, 5 is 4 and 5 was great work for me. If you've got resentments, do it the big book way. Just get the big book and do your resentments and get your resentments out of the way. Don't worry about the other stuff. When you hit 6 and you don't know what the hell you're doing, and you go back out and you go back and you grab a 12 and 12, you go back to the 4-step. You do a 4-step. There's no format in the 12 and 12. A bunch of questions you ask yourself, you make peace with those, and you move on into 6. You recalibrate. That's what I'm doing up there tonight. I'm recalibrating. You know, if I get it right, somebody's going to get up there and knock it out of adjustment again. Y'all are good at that. Y'all know how to do that. Keep me busy recalibrating. There's one more paragraph I want to touch on while I'm up here. My favorite paragraph in all of literature. There is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit, but when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. Now and then we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom, and will be comforted and assured that our destiny in that realm, if there's a that realm, there has to be a this realm too, and I will be and we'll be secure so long as we try, however falteringly, to find and do the will of our own Creator. And that's why I'm on this planet, to find the will and do of my own Creator. That's what this program's about. After a while, that's what it gets to be about. For some of us. I'm going to close with something from the big book. You won't find this in your big book if you've got a fourth edition. This is only in the third edition. What I stole from downstairs because I lost a man in here. Oh well. I found in my 20s Edna St. Vincent Millay's verse. Pity me the heart that is slow to learn what the quick mind sees at every turn. I'm jumping over to the other paragraph. If you want to read what it says there, feel free. That'd be page 534 in the third edition. So to my way of thinking, that is the definition of alcoholism. A state of being in which the emotions have failed to grow to the stature of the intellect. I know there are some alcoholics who seem terribly grown up, But I think that they are trying to make themselves think they are grown up. And the strain of their inadequacy, a childish vanity to be the most popular, the most sought after, the mostest of the most. And all of this is, in popular modern jargon, compensation for immaturity. Compensation for immaturity. What am I going to do with my childishness? What am I going to do with my childishness? I won't accept it. I'm going to deal with it one day at a time. With the love and help of you people. One day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rusty Jen. I enjoy being childish with you all the time.
Sleep, it'll never leave if I give.